Blog Talk Radio.
Earthquake swarm that's occurring in Virginia, East Coast, U.S.,
And we also see another large ring to the west here, and that's down at the border of New Mexico and Colorado, where there was a 5.3 yesterday, and a swarm thereafter of twos, threes, and kind of like what we see on the East Coast. And they're roughly parallel to each other when we zoom it in here. And we'll just turn this down. The rings show the potential affected area where people could possibly feel it. So we're looking at an area basically spanning the entire edge of the North American Craton. Now, I know I've brought that term up several times, and I really don't show you a diagram of it. One of my viewers was kind enough to put one together, and they even marked out the fault zones and the earthquake zones that have been affected lately. So they show the Idaho quake up here, the Colorado quake, and they've got it plotted out on a chart. So we'll go ahead and take a look at that really quick here. 1 second. Okay, and here it is. All right, so here is the kind of a, not a real line, but a fictitious line that's been devised by geologists showing the edge of the Craton. And it goes right down through Texas, Oklahoma, southern Arkansas, and then comes back up through New England, right up into Canada. And the red dots mark earthquakes that have been occurring. So here's Colorado, here's Oklahoma, and they're occurring right along the edge of the old unsubducted plate. And that means to me, so when you come back over here and look at Quake 3D, and we turn this up over the past few days, or 14 days, let's see, this goes all the way up to 14 days. So the last 14 days, really since my last earthquake update, you can see the edge of the Craton defined right here, where all these clusters of quakes are occurring. And you've got two big ones right here. We turn these back up here so you can see. We've got two large, semi-large earthquakes, and then right in between, you have the New Madrid seismic zone. Now, this is an area we're going to want to watch, as well as to the west. So Baja, California, north of Mono Lake, up to the Cascadia Range, and the New Madrid seismic zone, as well as the two areas that are currently going. So really, you're looking at an entire continental-wide earthquake threat watch along where the edge of the Craton is. Go back to that again. So if you live anywhere in any one of these states that goes all the way up into Canada as well, you're going to want to watch over the next couple weeks. Make sure you have earthquake preparedness plans and maybe just some food and water set aside in case a 5.9 hits your area and knocks the power, knocks the cell phone communication. That's something they're talking about on the news nonstop now, is no one was able to communicate because the cell phone towers went down. And that's probably because of all the sensitive computer equipment that's at every station, hard drives, et cetera, just different devices. When they sense vibration, they go into a shutdown safety mode immediately. And that, of course, cuts off communication. So you need to have a way, a decentralized way to communicate. It's ironic. I put out that video yesterday on communication, decentralized. So as we look to the West Coast, you can see this huge number of small earthquakes. I mean, it's so many you cannot see through. We're looking at 2,934 earthquakes on the map right now. So there's a lot to see through right here. And you can see the defining edge, though, and that's really what I'm trying to point out here, is this defining round edge. And it's going right up through the Rockies and back down along the coast with just a few quakes out to the sea. Now, of course, that's where the plate meets, and with the rest of the earthquake activity around the world over the last 14 days, you can really see the clusters as they stand out. So you've got a tremendous amount of movement up in Alaska. You've got volcano eruption up in Alaska. You've got a tremendous amount of movement in Hawaii, and you've got volcano eruption in Hawaii, fresh, new volcano eruption, nothing old. We're looking at fresh, new lava flows. You've got a huge amount of movement along the West Coast. When you look at all these, let me just back this out so you can really get a good idea. And turn it, you can just see how many 3,000 really is. Okay, that's a lot. And, of course, in California you have plumes, you have all types of fume reports coming up, and then you had even a few 6.0 earthquakes in the past 2-3 weeks, 5.9, 6.0s in Baja and South. as we go a little bit further south, you look at Central America, and of course that covers the entire portion of Central America south of Mexico. I mean, every spot in there in the last 2 weeks has gotten a 4 or a 5.0 earthquake. Literally, you cannot see, even with the rings turned all the way down, we could even turn the rings off. And we'll zoom in and you'll see it. There we go. So it's occurred all the way through here, and you see this edge of the, well, it's a fracture, but it's an edge of the plate, and it goes all the way out to Puerto Rico and makes this curve down to South America. And we've seen a series of earthquakes occur off Puerto Rico and now to the southeast of Puerto Rico. So, of course, that's an area you're going to want to watch as well. So Puerto Rico, eastern United States, New Madrid seismic zone, Cascade Range, Baja to Mono Lake, California. As for Canada, you want to watch southeastern Canada and northwestern Canada. Northwestern Canada had a 5.0 last week, it was a little over 2 weeks ago. It would be on this map right now, so it's not there. It's just a little over 2 weeks ago there was a 5.0 right up here in the Yukon Territory. As we get over to Europe, let me just bring this over, and sorry for the delay, guys. When there's this many earthquakes marked on the map, even with a fairly good video card, it still runs slow on Earthquake 3D. So let's just turn these up. And you can see this cluster that's occurred from North India and China right along through the Middle East, and it's basically terminated at Greece, Italy. You're looking right in this area, South Europe, as the area where it's terminated, and you haven't seen in 2 weeks' time any large earthquake from Spain into Poland. Well, that leads me to believe there's going to be a European earthquake at some point here on a greater than 5.0 level, and it most likely will be in Poland or in the Swiss Alps, right along through the defining line of the Alps, and it terminates down here right near the Rock of Gibraltar. So it could be anywhere from Gibraltar up through South Spain, through South France, up through Switzerland, and right up into Poland. So along that line, you're going to want to watch. Other area you're going to want to watch, English Channel, right here north of the Netherlands. Mid-Atlantic Ridge, watch that as well. There'll be some serious movement here now that the East Coast moved. We're going to see movement along the Mid-Atlantic Ridge in the 5 to 6.0 range. Africa, your only areas of threat watch are going to be where the volcanoes are located, and those are shown here clearly. As we get over into Asia, as we get down into New Zealand and Australia, we saw a 7.0 earthquake swarm this past week. It was very impressive to see it kick off one after the other. I don't know if there were any injuries. I don't think there were, so that's good news. But the bad news of all that is that the movement is just so noticeable. The large earthquake uptick, 5, 6, 7.0s, just all in the last 2 weeks, so many that it's really hard to tell, even turned off here. I mean, there's a lot of large earthquakes, noticeable, feelable earthquakes, ones that get reported by people and that get reported on the shake map. Now, when we get up into Japan, your threat watch is not over either. You're looking at a large earthquake, 6, 7.0, into the foreseeable future. It seems like there's at least one a week there. New Zealand, strangely quiet there. I don't know what more to say other than 2 weeks' time, you're not looking at any large earthquake in New Zealand. That means buildup is occurring, stress is building up down in New Zealand. That's an area, a hot spot we're going to want to watch. Okay, folks, so hang in there. Much love. I'll put a bunch of links down below. So if you live in an earthquake-prone area, any of the areas that I showed and that you see earthquakes occurring at right now, you're going to want to be prepared. Have a plan. Have certain provisions set aside, and make sure your loved ones know what the plan is. And it's a simple motto, but it's one to live by, which is, and I know it sounds cheesy, but it's don't be scared, be prepared. So hang in there, folks. Much love, And if you find any more earthquake reports that get censored off the maps like we saw earlier or that are being reported with the 6.0 that happened on the East Coast, definitely shoot me a message. Let me know. They do that.
So he thinks there are
going to
be more earthquakes.
Yeah. And this is, go to YouTube, all right? Best place to go, YouTube, okay? And check out Dutch, D-U-T-C-H-S-I-N-S-E, Dutch Sense, okay? And he's got a lot of stuff that he's posted on here about this and predicted these things. And he's actually gotten in quite a bit of trouble.
Really?
Because of his predictions have been accurate, and he's been coming across so many thousands and thousands of people, or millions of people.
So who's he gotten into trouble with?
This is the guy that I told you about. I was going to play this last night, but he was on Planet Camelot, and somebody actually came in and shot his
This
is the guy.
Oh dear.
But and they've been flagging a lot of his videos. As well.
Because they're so accurate.
So, I'm asking you again, support this guy. And why I'm playing this tonight is to help him and promote his work, because he's so damn good. His graphics are outstanding. So I please go to Dutch Sense, S-I-N-S-E, on YouTube. Okay?
Mm.
And,
I guess he has a bunch of other things.
Yeah, he's got a tremendous amount of other stuff. There's what I wanted to talk about tonight was not just his, but there was also another one reported, several actually reported. I might as well go through this stuff so people know. But a deep 7.0 magnitude earthquake shakes Peru, the third 7.0 earthquake to strike the world in 4 days. Amazing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is news today. And of course, you don't hear it on the news because...
They're not talking about the earthquake anymore.
Right, right. And I'm going to... let's go to this here right now. All right. August 24th, which is today, of course, Peru, 7.0 magnitude earthquake shook buildings in Peru's capital city, Lima, on Wednesday. Witnesses and U.S. Geological Survey said... The quake was quickly followed by a 5.3 aftershock, and the USGS said the epicenter of the quake was 82.07 kilometers north of Pucallpa in the Peruvian Amazon forest close to the Brazilian border. The U.S. Geological Survey said the quake, initially upgraded to a magnitude 6.9, was 145.2 kilometers deep in the ground, right?
Mm.
Yeah, and there's a graphic here on this one.
But by numbers, for once, the low earthquake figure on the USGS global grid belies the disturbing fact of just how much the planet has been shaking in the month of August, and the statistics are quite alarming. Typically, the world sees an average of 15 7.0 magnitude earthquakes a year. We've already had 3 in the month of August, 2 in Vanuatu, that's off of Australia, and 1 in Peru. We've had 7 earthquakes of the 6.0 range in August and have seen more than 18 earthquakes in the upper 5.6 to 5.9 range. This includes 4 in Vanuatu, 3 in Japan, 3 in Papua New Guinea, 2 in the Sandwich Islands, 1 in Alaska, and 1 in Kermadec, one in the Solomon Islands, 1 in Pakistan, 1 in China, 1 in Ecuador, 1 in Virginia. We're returning to a cluster period of very high seismic activity, reminiscent of the 1960s. This is particularly the case with large earthquake events, but by 2012, if the current trend continues to escalate, we could go way beyond what we're seeing now.
And that was from the Extinction Protocol. I'm going to check that out. Okay. So, there's more. I got a couple of more here that I think is important to talk about. So hang on one second here. this one. U.S. Seismic Hazard Zone awakened. Long Valley Supervolcano Earthquake Swarm Notice. Okay? And this is kind of strange. This is all from the from different sites here, but hang on. August 24th, okay, today, Mammoth Lakes, California.
Mammoth Lakes.
Mammoth Lake. Long Valley Caldera. While the East Coast recovers from earthquake jitters, small quakes have been rocking California. A minor jolt struck the San Francisco Bay Area Wednesday at 9:57 a.m. That was this morning, folks. Just hours after a similar temblor hit the same spot late Tuesday night. The U.S. Geological Survey says both magnitude 3.6 quakes were centered around 6 miles southeast of Oakland along the Hayward Fault, a major Northern California fault zone. Sierra Nevada high country was also rattled by an earthquake early Wednesday. The U.S. Geological Survey says a magnitude 4.4 quake hit at 4:59 a.m. about 9 miles southeast of Mammoth Lakes. A Mono County sheriff's dispatcher says authorities have had no reports of damage, and a magnitude 5.8 quake jolted much of the eastern United States on Tuesday, which we're aware of. And that was from the Sacramento Bee that reported that. And there's a map here, and it shows the area that was most affected, which is part of Arizona, Salt Lake City,
Mexico.
Denver, New Mexico, Albuquerque, Long Valley, California, Los Angeles, and up into up around Boise, Idaho as well. So it's been amazing. I would say in Kansas City. So these areas are being pretty well affected. So let's go on.
There's a lot of seismic activity.
Yeah,
huh?
there really is. Really is. And let's see. I think this one I already have. I think I did this one. Let me check. This one here, America hit by earthquake swarm, okay, by Coup Media, and I'm going to check this one, because this is, this one was quite amazing as well. Coup Media, Revolutionary Human Media, is the outfit here, the Coup Media Group. America hit by earthquake swarm, earthquake watch. The earthquake, quake had a preliminary magnitude of 6.8 and was centered 50 miles north of the jungle city of Pucallpa, near the border in Brazil, the U.S. Geological Survey said. The quake occurred at 12:46 p.m. local time and occurred 90 miles underground. And the agency said the deeper the quake, the less it is likely to cause damage. An unidentified local woman interviewed by Peru's Canal and television station said the earth shook like a hammock. And a police official in the regional capital of Pucallpa, Angela Romero, said there were no indications of damage. We all went out calmly to the street, she said. And there's a lot more reports here. Earthquakes in Colorado and earthquake hits D.C., of course, and we all know that one. The largest earthquake to strike Colorado in almost 40 years has shaken hundreds of people, and that was yesterday as well. People near the New Mexico border. The magnitude 5.3 earthquake was recorded at about 11:46 p.m. Monday, mountain time, I guess. About 9 miles southwest of Trinidad, Colorado, and about 180 miles south of Denver. According to National Earthquake Information Center in Golden, Colorado, the quake followed two smaller ones that hit the area early that day. The quake is the largest in Colorado since magnitude 5.7 was recorded in 1973. U.S. Geological Service said that one was centered in the northwestern part of the state, about 50 miles north of Grand Junction. Two homes have been damaged. Deputies were investigating reports of rock slides along the highway.
A Las Alamos County Sheriff's Office dispatcher said, I thought maybe a car had hit my house. 70-year-old Trinidad resident Nadine Baca said, then I called to my son, and he said it was the third quake today. Another USGS geophysicist, Shangazo Chin, said the Information Center had received calls from more than 70 people in Trinidad and several dozen people in New Mexico who felt the shaking. More than 30 people in Colorado Springs, about 130 miles north of Trinidad, also reported feeling the quake, he said. A magnitude 4.6 quake was felt in the same area at 5:30 p.m. on Monday, and a magnitude 2.9 quake was recorded just before 8 a.m. Two aftershocks, one recorded at 3.5, another at 3.8, followed early Tuesday, more than an hour after the 5.3 quake. The last time the area received such a series of earthquakes was in August and September of 2001, when about a dozen smaller-sized tremblers were recorded, Chin said. The area seems to be active again, he said. No kidding.
Yeah, no kidding. So it's quite frightening, you know. Radiation dumped into the Pacific is unsafe. That's radiation from the Fukushima.
Oh, boy.
And radiation detected in California, media cover-up. California radiation level testing. California radiation levels, contamination spreading.
Nuclear radiation worries in the United States.
What? Contamination spreading. Let's go to that right now, because that's from, and you know, we've also, with all these earthquakes, so many, there's about 100 active nuclear power plants around the country, and so many
of
them are located on these fault lines.
Right,
you know?
Because they're near water.
Yeah. And so they're all
vulnerable,
trouble, you know. So we could be looking at some serious hell. Okay, nuclear radiation worries the United States. Well, let's just go to that for a second, and then
Revolutionary Human Media.
That's the group,
Cool
Media Group. Okay, and you can go to that site.
By Planet X. I don't know what that means. But.
This was written back in April when after Fukushima. And there was a lot of information about what happened. And I saw this actual thing before, where it shows it shows a diagram of the radiation that swept
just
from
spreading
Japan
out
right across the United States and into the over through Europe. And California got hit really, really bad. And we played this before.
Oh, I remember that.
I'm going to please go to this blog called Cool Media Group, or you can go to Revolution Human Media, and they have a lot of information here on this stuff. So, all right, I'm going to get off the subject now. We got a lot of other stuff I wanted to talk about, but I'm going to ask you to please check out, especially Dutch Sintz on YouTube. And check out his incredible graphics and stuff that he's talking about. It's blow you away. Kucinich actually today, or yesterday, I believe, came out with this, that the U.S. was, the U.S., the reason for the U.S. Going into Libya was after the oil. U.S. Congressman Dennis Kucinich has blamed the Obama administration for pursuing control over Libya's vast oil reserves by participating in a military campaign in the North Africa country.
Was the United States, through participation in the overthrow of the Libyan regime, furthering the aims of international oil corporations in pursuit of control over one of the world's largest oil resources, Kucinich said in a statement on his website on Tuesday? Did the United States, at the inception of the war against Libya, align itself with elements of al-Qaeda, while elsewhere continue to use the threat of al-Qaeda as a reason for U.S. military intervention, presence, and occupation, he added. Kucinich pointed out that the five-month-old military intervention in Libya sets a dangerous precedent for unilateral attacks on sovereign nations. He also urged the international court to investigate potential war crimes by military leaders on all sides of the conflict. Resources which should be spent creating jobs in America are going to perpetuate war abroad, Kucinich said, adding resources which should be used to build bridges in America continue to be used to bomb bridges elsewhere.
In March, Kucinich suggested. In March, Kucinich suggested President Barack Obama authorizing airstrikes on Libya were an impeachable offense, and sponsored a July measure to defund the military effort in North African site. Libya has been the scene of intense fighting between regime troops and fighters since the revolution seeking to topple Gaddafi began in mid-February. Libya has been the scene of, NATO has conducted thousands of airstrikes over Libya since March to implement a UN Security Council solution that called for the protection of civilians.
Yeah, right.
However, scores of civilians have been killed during the NATO airstrikes. And what's interesting about this, if you've seen the news today, this is all crazy. It's total chaos there. There's no leadership at all. The rebels are fighting the rebels. They don't even know who they are. They're shooting everybody. They're shooting up in the air. There are people who are storming into Tripoli, and they have no idea what the hell they're doing.
They're just looting everything.
Yeah, that's all that's happening. And they raided.
Oh, we'll go in and impose a. Separate regime.
Yeah, they raided his compound, and it's like, you know. So, let's see. This cracked me up. This one today.
What's
U.S.
that?
Threatens to cut Egypt aid over Israel. Okay? this is something else, okay? Because we read about, I think we read this last night, about the attack on Israel and Egypt. They're pulling out their envoys. U.S. threatens to cut Egypt aid over Israel. The U.S. Congresswoman, Kay Granger, has threatened that if... Who the hell is she? Threatened that if Egypt withdraws from its peace treaty with Israel, Washington would cut its $2 billion annual aid to Cairo. All right? All that money went into Mubarak's hands anyway.
The Egyptian people never saw it.
That guy's worth $75 billion. He's dying now, but, too bad. The United States aid to Egypt is predicted on the peace treaty between... Egypt and Israel. And so the relationship between Egypt and Israel is extremely important. Granger said in an interview with Jerusalem Post, of course, on Monday. The remark came as tension between Cairo and Tel Aviv increased after Israeli forces killed 5 Egyptian border guards on Thursday at Egypt's border with the Gaza Strip. Israeli Minister for Military Affairs Ehud Barak Saturday said, Israel deeply regrets the deaths of the Egyptian officers after Egypt announced it would withdraw its ambassador to Tel Aviv if no official apology was made. And Egypt was the first Arab country to sign a peace treaty with Israel in 1979. But the situation has changed drastically since the overthrow of Egyptian dictator Hosni Mubarak in February, and a number of Egyptian political parties have been calling for changes in the peace treaty. The United States' annual aid has been provided to Egypt since the Cairo-Tel Aviv peace treaty was signed. Granger also warned that the U.S. would cut the $500 million in aid it provides to the Palestinian Authority if it would seek to win a UN recognition for statehood at the UN General Assembly meeting in September. Granger is the chairwoman of the U.S. House Appropriations Foreign Operations Subcommittee, which is the institution in charge of setting the U.S. foreign aid bill. Screw this bitch. Holy crap. The Palestinians aren't allowed to seek, they're going to lose their money, right? So it's let's see. I would say please write, email, get crazy. Okay, I'm going to do this on Kay Granger, okay? U.S. Congresswoman Kay Granger, all right? Tell her to shut the hell up. back down and get the hell out of government, all right? Because this woman is one crazy bitch, all right, to think that she can do that, all right, and pull Palestinian money. Not only, you know, just because they're seeking state rights, what the hell is wrong with them, what is wrong with our government here? That
well,
this kind of bozo woman.
She's paid off by tax.
Of course she is, but that doesn't matter. She's voted in by us. So screw this woman.
Well, that's also questionable since the ballots are all fixed.
Yeah, but this woman is sick. Kay Granger, remember that name?
I wonder what kind of stupidity our government
and this congresswoman, okay, is.
She's like all the others.
Yeah.
She's just the face of Congress.
It's just sick.
It sure is, Leo. I agree with you.
FBI. Now, this is a big one. This cracks me up. FBI organizes almost all terror plots in the U.S. can you believe that?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, it's just
all false flag operations.
Now, of course,
crack down on citizens.
You got to consider the source on this, but nevertheless, it's pretty interesting. This is from Russian television, okay? But Russian television has broken a lot of stories over the years, a lot of the stuff they're talking about is pretty credible.
Yeah.
Would you like to read this or
sure.
read this with me?
Sure.
Let me start to read it
and then you can read part of it. FBI organizes almost all terror plots in the U.S. The Federal Bureau of Investigation employs upwards of 15,000 undercover agents today, 10 times what they had on the roster back in 1975. If you think that's a few spies too many, spies earning as much as $100,000 per assignment, one doesn't have to go too deep into their track record to see their accomplishments. Those agents are responsible for an overwhelming amount of terrorist stings that have stopped major domestic catastrophes in the vein of 9/11 from happening on American soil. Another thing these agents are responsible for, however, is plotting those very schemes. The FBI has in recent years used trained informants not just to snitch on suspected terrorists, but to set them up from the get-go. A recent report put together by Mother Jones and the investigative reporting program at the University of California, Berkeley, analyzes some shrinking statistics about the role of FBI informants in terrorism cases that the Bureau has targeted in the decades since the September 11th attacks. The report reveals that the FBI regularly infiltrates communities where they suspect terrorist-minded individuals to be engaging with others. Regardless of their intentions, agents are sent to converse within the community, find suspects that could potentially carry out lone wolf attacks, and then more or less encourage them to do so by providing weaponry, funds, and a plan. FBI-directed agents will encourage otherwise unwilling participants to plot out terrorist attacks only to bust them before any events fully materialize.
That's what you call justifying your job.
Yeah.
Okay? Trying to justify their jobs. And $100,000 a whack.
Additionally, one former high-level FBI official speaking to Mother Jones says that for every informant officially employed by the Bureau, up to 3 unofficial agents are working undercover. The FBI has used those informants to set up and thus shut down several of the more high-profile would-be attacks in recent years. The report reveals that the Washington, D.C. metro bombing plots, the New York City subway plot, the attempt to blow up Chicago's Sears Tower, and dozens more were all orchestrated by FBI agents. In fact, reads the report, only 3 of the more well-known terror plots of the last decade weren't orchestrated by FBI-involved agents.
The report reveals that in many of the stings, important meetings between informants and the unknowing participants are left purposefully unrecorded, as to avoid any entrapment charges that could cause the case to be dismissed. Perhaps the most high-profile of the FBI-proposed plots was the case of the Newburgh Four, around an hour outside of New York City. An informant infiltrated a Muslim community and engaged four local men to carry out a series of attacks. Those men may have never actually carried out an attack, but once the informant offered them a plot and a pair of missiles, they agreed. And defense attorneys cried entrapment, but the men still were sentenced to 25 years apiece. The problem with the cases we're talking about is that defendants would not have done anything if not knocked, kicked in the ass by government agents, Martin Stoller tells Mother Jones. Stoller represented a suspect involved in the New York City bombing plot that was set up by FBI agents. They're creating crimes to solve crimes so they can claim a victory in the war on terror. For their part, the FBI says this method is a plan for preemption, prevention, and disruption.
Yeah, the report also reveals that of the 500-plus prosecutions of terrorism-related cases they analyzed, nearly half of them involved the use of informants, many of whom worked for the FBI in exchange for money or to work off criminal charges. Of the 158 prosecutions carried out, 49 defendants participated in plots that agent provocateurs arranged on behalf of the FBI. Experts note that the chance of winning a terrorism-related trial, entrapment or not, is near impossible. The plots people are accused of being part of, attacking subway systems or trying to bomb a building, are so frightening that they can overwhelm a jury, David Cole, a Georgetown University law professor, tells Mother Jones. Since 9/11, almost two-thirds of the cases linked to terrorism have ended with guilty pleas. They don't say, I've been entrapped or I was immature, a retired FBI official remarks. All of this and those guilty pleas often stem from just being in the right place at the wrong time. Farhana Kira of the group Muslim Advocate notes that agents go into mosques on fishing expeditions just to see where they can get interest in the community. The FBI is now telling agents that they can go into houses of worship without probable cause, says Kira. That raises serious constitutional issues. From the setup to the big finish, the whole sting operation is rife with constitutional issues, such as that a decade since 9/11, since 9/11, however, the FBI is reaching through whatever means it can pull together to keep terrorists, or whom they think could someday become one, forever hurting America. That's ridiculous.
The FBI is setting up all the terrorist plots. They're setting them up.
Make you feel scared, to impose more harsh, restrictive measures, to deny you your constitutional rights. It's all a big sham.
Preparing for an apocalypse in America. This is interesting. There are people out there that are actually preparing. Seriously. And the American...
Just say an audio piece.
Yeah, but let's see if there's
how
long
it is. How long is that? It might be interesting.
I don't know.
We'll play a little bit of it and see what it is.
Yeah. American Preppers Network is a group of people storing supplies, equipment and ammunition in case an end-of-the-world disaster strikes the U.S. Russian TV visits one...
Well, if it's an end-of-the-world disaster, why stock supplies?
A typical house in a regular suburban town, but here a family is preparing for the end of the world. German Mauser and P-38 from the Second World War, a 12-gauge shotgun, a 40-caliber pistol, and AR-15 weapons and ammunition are key. If we are carrying this out on the street for some reason, all hell broke out. It's an end-of-the-world type situation. You can't walk around with these guns here, said Keith Proskura, a certified NRA instructor and owner of two businesses. He stores food and supplies to help them survive no matter what disaster might hit. Breakdown of the government is one thing a lot of people are preparing for now. We are facing possible pay delays for Social Security. I am not going to need all of this stuff for that. but you are going to have a lot of Americans who are upset, he said. 37-year-old is among thousands of American preppers who would rather be ready than sorry. Rush TV spoke with Tom Martin, the founder of Preppers Network, from inside his truck. It's not so much political, but more economic. I see people every day lose their jobs and have to rely on food that they have stored up previously to live on that food, just because they've lost their jobs, said Martin. Gas masks, bulletproof vests, canned food, tents, and helmets fill basements like this one. A prepper survival bag is not a regular first aid kit. It includes things like a parachute cord, a survival knife, a meal ready to eat, a body heat retaining space blanket, a bagged emergency drinking water. According to preppers, one must also be ready for chemical catastrophes or a large-scale terrorist attack. It's almost done here, but if contaminants land on top of you, you've got to have a couple of pairs of gloves on. Your feet will slip into a chemical-proof boot. If you go into an unknown situation, you are going to want to have one that's fully encapsulated, so that you are 100% sure that nothing will get through to you.
A variety of walkie-talkies are ready for use if the communication network shuts down. On the other end of the line is Keith's father, John Proscura, who is actually in the next room. A police officer for 25 years, he is now retired. His main pastime is operating a ham radio. For him, communications will be key if a disaster strikes. The tsunami and earthquake in Japan a couple of months ago, amateur radio played a big part in that in providing emergency communication. And the big hurricane in Haiti a couple of years ago, said the man. There is one scenario he fears more than others. If there was some kind of nuclear fallout, radio wave propagation would probably, for all practical purposes, cease, said John. Around $10,000 is the heavy price tag for these supplies. But to preppers, it's not just the 10 grand sitting in a basement with uncertainty taking over the U.S. They say those who seem paranoid today may end up being the smartest tomorrow.
And that's, you can go to that on Rush TV by... Global Policy Forum 211, yeah. So check that one out. And we got about we got 10 minutes or so. I've got another video,
audio.
I don't know about another audio, but I've got something else I wanted to talk about tonight. Steve brought this on, but this particular video, we're going to have to narrate it because the statistics on this.
Oh, the one you were telling me about. Okay.
No, this one, the statistics are so fascinating. They're just,
really?
Yeah. You can go to this, by the way. Did you know shift happens?
Globalization, information age.
Right, and this is on YouTube. And check this, and we're going to, I want to read this because it's all words.
Did you know?
I'm going to shut the music off. Sometimes size does matter.
If you're one in a million in China.
There are 1,300 people just like you.
In India, there are 1,100 people just like you.
The 25% of the population in China with the highest IQs
is greater than the total population of North America.
In India, it's the top 28%.
Translation for teachers. They have more honors kids than we have kids.
And did you know that?
China will soon become the number one English-speaking country in the world.
If you took every single job in the U.S. today and shipped it to China,
it still would have a labor surplus.
During the course of this presentation, 60
babies will be born in the U.S., 244 babies will be born in China, and 351 babies will be born in India.
U.S. Department of Labor estimates that today's learner will have 10 to 14 jobs.
By age 38.
Yeah. According to the U.S. Department of Labor,
one out of every four workers today is working for a company for whom they have been employed less than a year.
More than one out of two are working for a company for whom they have worked less than 5 years.
According to former Secretary of Education Richard Riley,
the top 10 jobs that will be in demand in 2010 didn't exist in 2004.
We are currently preparing students for jobs that don't exist yet.
Using technologies that haven't yet been invented.
In order to solve problems we don't even know are problems yet.
Name this country.
Richest in the world, largest military, center of world business and finance, strongest education system, world center of innovation and invention. England.
Currency, world standard of value, and highest standard of living. That's England.
Hmm.
Not interesting?
Yeah, not us.
I think it was the United States, blah, 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 right?
We don't have the highest standard.
No.
In 1900. Did you know?
Oh, they were the highest standard of living in 1900.
The U.S. is 20th in the world in broadband internet penetration. Luxembourg just passed us.
Nintendo invested more than $140 million in research and development in 2002 alone.
The U.S. federal government spent less than half as much on research and innovation in education.
One out of every eight couples married in the U.S. last year met online.
There are over 106 million registered users of MySpace as of September 2006.
If MySpace were a country, it would be the 11th largest in the world between Japan and Mexico.
The average MySpace page is visited 30 times a day.
Did you know?
We are living in exponential times.
Exponential. And there are over 2.7 billion searches performed on Google each month.
To whom were these questions addressed, e.g., before Google?
The number of text messages sent and received every day exceeds the population of the planet.
There are about 540,000 words in the English language.
About five times as many as during Shakespeare's time.
More than 3,000 new books are published.
Daily.
It is estimated that a week's worth of New York Times
contains more information than a person was likely to come across in a lifetime in the 18th century.
It is estimated that 1.4 exabytes of unique new information will be generated worldwide this year.
That's estimated to be more than in the last 5,000 years.
The amount of new technical information is doubling every 2 years.
For students starting a four-year technical or college degree, this means that
half of what they learn in their first year of study will be outdated by their third year of study.
Amazing. And it is predicted to double every 72 hours by 2010.
Third generation fiber optics has recently been tested by both NEC.
That pushes 10 trillion bits per second down the strand of fiber.
That's 1,900 CDs or 150 million stimulus.
Every second.
Yep.
It's currently tripling about every 6 months and is expected to do so for at least the next 20 years.
The fiber is already there. They're just improving the switches on the ends, which means the marginal cost of these improvements is effectively zero.
Predictions are that e-paper will be cheaper than real paper.
47 million laptops were shipped worldwide last year.
The
$100
laptop project is expecting to ship between 50 to 100 million laptops a year to children in underdeveloped countries.
Predictions are that by 2013, a supercomputer will be built that exceeds the computation capability of the human brain.
That's next year, a year and a half after next. And by 2023, when first graders will be just 23 years old, and beginning their first careers.
It will only take a $1,000 computer to exceed the capabilities of the human brain.
And while technical predictions farther out than about 15 years are hard to make,
predictions are that by 2049, a $1,000 computer will exceed the computational capabilities of the human race.
What does it all mean? Shift happens.
Now you know.
This is the polar shift we're talking about. And in fact, what I loved about this was that is it showed how fast things have changed and how fast. And if you go to the Mayan calendar and you look at how things are speeding up and speeding up and speeding up, right now we're in the last day of the Mayan calendar, the last period. We're headed in February 11th. Next year we'll be headed into the universal period, which is only going to last 260 days.
That's
right?
Not very long.
And that's the end. That's the end.
Of the Mayan calendar.
The end of time.
They know it.
Yeah.
As they
and the advancement of humanity, as we know, as opposed to we're supposed to be.
Well, that's probably when the polar shift will occur.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool, actually, when you think about it. But I just wanted to, we can go on from there. This one, let's see. We just
have a few minutes.
Yeah. Let me see if I put out the post here that I had. Thousands of them, folks. This one lasts a little long, but I got to. Let's see.
Children to five,
this
please,
might be
and
a
watch
good one there.
Okay.
This might be a good one. This is a one that's called Horse Crap. It's on YouTube, and it's Adam versus the Man. But it shows how these protesters were dancing on Jefferson's memorial, and the horses were crapping. Police horses were crapping all over the place and all over the monument. This is only a minute long, but it's worth listening to.
So it happens to be the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. We had a little more success with our civil disobedience today. We're very encouraged by that. But I want to point out the police officers showed up. We had the four horsemen of the apocalypse here over there. And one of the excuses given for body slamming and choking and kneeing me in the ribs last week was that the parks police really need to maintain a calm and tranquil, respectful environment at the Jefferson Memorial. As you can see behind me, there's a giant pile of horse crap. So the government, who wants to body slam and arrest people for dancing as a disturbance at the Jefferson Memorial, feel that it's okay to crap on the memorial, but you can't dance on it. Something is seriously wrong with this country. What we demonstrate today is that it's okay for good people to break bad laws, and if we stick together, we can do it. We can succeed. We can beat back bad laws. We can beat back a police state that is out of control. We can stand together as free, independent human beings, stand up for our rights, and restore freedom, not just in this country, but throughout the world. So I want to thank everybody who is here today and everybody who is a part of this event across the country and across the world. Thank you so much. Keep dancing for freedom. Keep standing up for your rights. Disobey bad laws.
You can check that out on YouTube.
You made a good point there.
Oh, yeah.
It was a simple point,
oh, yeah,
but
absolutely.
He certainly hit home, I think. Good job. You should get an award.
Yeah, we're just about done. So we only got about less than a minute left. So, anyway,
I want to thank the folks for being with us tonight, and we hope we brought you some news
that you
get off the mainstream media or other places.
Also, let me tell you, please check on Friday night, tomorrow night, please join us as well. But on Friday night, we have George Dixon, and we'll be discussing more of the 2012 solar shift, polar shift, I should say, and all the earthquakes that are happening, and why, and the Mayan calendar, and the predictions and the prophecies.
So we hope you'll tune in and be with us.
Yes.
But enjoy the rest of your evening, folks.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. And don't forget, Friday night, tomorrow night, please join me in the fourth dimension. Here we go.